and this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. If you ask anyone in Cincinnati who lived through the events of 2001 to describe what happened after the shooting death of Timothy Thomas by police, you'll get different accounts. To some, riots broke out in the streets with days of looting and violence and buildings vandalized. Others saw protesters striving to raise awareness for an injustice, and in doing so, disrupted the typical social order. We would call this civil unrest. Similar protests in the years since 2001, including in Ferguson, Missouri, and Baltimore, Maryland, have been described as riots, uprisings, and civil unrest at different times. So what defines the events of 2001, and what responsibility do the media have in reporting on these movements? Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss is Northern Kentucky University Department of Communication Assistant Professor Dr. Steve Bienaimé. Dr. Bienaimé, welcome to our program.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me.
I want to note a statement from Cincinnati Public Radio. Quote, "We acknowledge in 2001 it was common to call what happened in Cincinnati April 9th through the 14th, 2001, a riot. So why aren't we calling it that now? Through re-examining the events of 2001 and similar occurrences over the past 20 years, we acknowledge riot is a racially fraught word that doesn't depict the full complexity of these multifaceted situations. We believe words like civil unrest or uprising better reflect what occurred in Over the Rhine in terms of many people mobilizing to seek structural societal changes following the killing of black men by Cincinnati police." And you can read more about that at WVXU.org or send your feedback to us at newsroom@WVXU.org. Steve, these words have been described as racially fraught and polarizing. How do you think, as an observer of these things, media organizations come about using the words that they do?
I think that we have to acknowledge who gives us the words. And often we take what the police or law enforcement or even the politicians tell us, and then we often amplify and reflect those viewpoints.
So a lot of the terms are coming from the people that media organizations often get first official information from, right? The police.
Correct. It used to be, and it still is in a lot of newsrooms, common practice when the police arrest someone, you just produce the produce the police report. So the police give you a whole narrative as how an event occurred, and we never heard an opposing viewpoint. And I think when police or those in charge label something as a riot, we tend to then repeat and amplify that.
I'm thinking about a very recent event, something from January 6th of this year, the events at the U.S. Capitol. They've been widely characterized as an insurrection, but you do see defenders of that trying to downplay the use of that word. Now, that crowd was made up mostly of white people. Can you help us understand how race comes into play with the way different audiences and different types of people might choose to characterize a certain event?
I think this is a really great point you bring up. And I think a lot of it comes down to who the journalists are and how closely can the journalists identify or understand the motivations of a group. So when we look at news media in the United States and we're bringing in race, it's predominantly middle class to upper middle class white people are journalists. And so when you're talking about what happened in 2001 in Cincinnati in OTR, pre-gentrification, there aren't a lot of journalists who frequent these spaces, frequent that space at that time. So understanding the motivations or the frustrations of a group of people, this group being predominantly working class black people, went ignored by a lot of news media. When you look at what happened January 6th and you're seeing a lot of the protesters or a good number of them are middle class to upper middle class white people, some of whom we've read, thanks to the reporting you see in the Washington Post and others, some of them took private planes to get there or even had corporate or very affluent people sponsoring these trips. So you're looking at it and it's like, no, that person can't be an insurrectionist. I know that person, or that person grew up like me. It has to be something else. So we kind of see an othering at some levels, and at other times, perhaps an overcorrection to explain an event.
We're talking with Northern Kentucky University Assistant Professor of Communication, Dr. Steve Bien-Aimé. And Dr. Bien-Aimé, we have a very polarized media, right? You can flip across a variety of cable news outlets and watch coverage of the exact same event unfolding. So if we were watching live coverage, for example, of a predominantly black crowd acting in response to events in a large city, say the killing of a black person at the hands of police, if you watched Fox News, for example, you would see commentators actively calling it a riot. Elsewhere, you might see softer language used. Are riots a thing? I mean, is there a time to use that word?
So this is a good point and a good question. And I was looking this up before our chat today, and riot is a violent public disorder. That's what Merriam-Webster called it when I looked it up this morning. And I think one thing to ask ourselves as news media is, to whom does the violence occur? It seems that we're equating violence on buildings and now attributing this across the board. It was a violent protest.
And so,
who got beaten up? The building did.
Right.
Oh, go ahead, Mike.
No, I'm sorry. I thought you would stop, but please continue your thought.
And so when we're saying something is violent and then we're attributing it to property damage, and looking at the events of 2001, an estimated $3.6 million in damages. And it's like, okay, but we're not talking about the human life aspect. How many people went to the hospital? How many people died? How many physical violent acts occurred? And often the violent acts come from the state or the authorities acting on the protesters rather than the protesters perpetrating physical violence on another person. So I think we have to be very cognizant. Are we equating violence on a building? And I'm not trying to say that this is a proper thing, but are we equating violence on an object to violence on a person?
In a way, Professor, this goes all the way back to the very beginning of American history, doesn't it? I'm thinking the Boston Massacre, as we know it, for what happened pre-Revolutionary War. And, I mean, if you were to read, you know, pro-American news articles at that time, massacre would have probably been a word that you found, whereas pro-British media at the time or pro-British tellings of the story might talk about quashing a rebellion. So, I mean, our history is riddled with this type of language battles, right?
It's always going to be this way. Culture is a site of conflict, right? Whose values are going to be promoted, and language matters a lot. And this is something, I'm glad you brought this up. This is something that is very serious. As somebody who teaches inclusive language and does trainings on it and researches it, how you talk about issues reflects how people perceive issues and perceives groups. So words are not just things to be bandied about without care. This has a huge influence on how we remember and discuss issues. When I was growing up and going to elementary school, high school, the Boston Tea Party wasn't called a riot, right? It's this tea party, right? It, throwing tea over the ship. Now, this would be perhaps, like, I haven't seen British media on it, but they would perhaps call this a riot. Well, we didn't call it that. So I think there is a lot there to this question.
Well, particularly for media outlets and journalists and host of programs like me, when we're talking about these types of events, what are the strategies we should deploy so that we're not just relying on single words to encompass an entire event? What type of strategies should we use to give more context to what's really happening?
I think something for journalists and something for the listeners, news readers, news consumers to consider is in any news event, what are the backgrounds and motivations that led up to the event? I think we often spend too much time on describing the event as it's occurring when we are looking at something like January 6th or right after the event has occurred. And perhaps if we spent more time proactively thinking about what's going on with different groups of people when we're looking at something, the events of 2001, disproportionate policing and the disproportionate economic situations of different city residents. All right. Are we describing those stories or are we only talking about a very visible reaction to a lot of other things that were building at that time? When we're looking at, now speaking more to journalists, news media, are we talking about the event with nuance or are we talking about the event in terms of hooking an audience, right? Getting clicks, getting tweets. When we're thinking about events, are we trying to show the extreme outliers, right? Oh, there was a violent incident between protesters and police. Well, if 99% of the protesters are peaceful and are marching and are having benign interactions with police, how much time are we giving to the 1% that was extreme, right? Are we hyping the conflict frame or the sensationalistic frame more so than what was going on?
Well, that goes back to, I think, what I was asking moments ago about the cable news coverage. We know that cable news outlets tend to have a partisan bent and perhaps even an agenda. And so when you look at the same types of activities you hear about Antifa, for example, you might see one news organization say something was mostly peaceful. And then you will have another news station showing a building being blown out and set on fire and talking to business owners who lost property. And it seems that neither characterization is fully correct about what's happening.
Well, and I think something for your listeners to understand is no journalistic story is going to be 100% comprehensive, right? You're taking people, journalists on the ground in often very turbulent situations, trying to relay and portray an event from the people they have access to and from their own senses. So you need to take a perspective of, okay, it's mostly peaceful with the building that was destroyed, with a conflict between police and protesters, with an interview with a protester or community leader articulating why there is frustration going on. So you're trying, it's very difficult for news consumers, right? But you're attempting to take bits and pieces from all over to kind of create a complete mosaic, if you will. Because so much information is fragmented, it's just hard to put it all together into one coherent story.
And we're talking with Dr. Steve Bien-Aimé, a professor, an assistant professor in the Department of Communication at Northern Kentucky University. I know you've got some research in news consumption and social media. And something that I like talking to students about is that it's not like the old days where media outlets are only competing with each other. You're really competing with everyone. Everyone is a content producer now. And what role has social media content from people on the ground played in shaping the narrative that ultimately plays out in mass news media?
I don't want to sound like I'm hemming and hawing, but you see extreme positives and extreme negatives both occurring simultaneously. So what you can see, and we in different events, somebody will take a 45-second snippet of something, put it on social media, and then it becomes a scandal or it becomes part of the news cycle. And what can happen is it's a citizen or perhaps even citizen journalist takes something, puts it on there, and then people with a lot of social media followers or a big platform will retweet it, share it, like it, what have you. And it that messaging and framing of the event gets out there without much context. And then what happens is the mainstream or established news media has to spend a lot of time explaining why it's not covering the issue that way or getting a fuller story. At the same time, the citizen and citizen journalists reporting can sometimes provide a good counterbalance to the official sources who tell you, no, this happened and it happened this way. Well, so-and-so citizen took a video and it showed a very, very different viewpoint. And so at times, this is really good when we're not getting a complete picture. But I think at times we also need to show restraint to say, is there more to what we're seeing? So it's a very, very complicated landscape, media consumption, news consumption landscape for both journalists and for news consumers, because there's just so much coming at us and it's hard to process it in real time.
Professor, I started our conversation by reading a statement from Cincinnati Public Radio that explains why we as a news organization are using the term civil unrest as opposed to riot as we reflect and talk about what happened in 2001 here in Cincinnati. You helped us craft that statement. And in our last minute or 90 seconds or so we have together, how did you come about helping us with that term?
Jennifer Merritt from your team reached out, and as a member of the community advisory board, I wanted to, and somebody who researches this, wanted to help out. And you all had a very thoughtful statement. And to expand upon that, I think you want to be as transparent as you can to your viewership and listeners and readers about why you're changing something and what you're trying to do. And I applaud the efforts at Cincinnati Public Radio, among other news outlets. We're trying to fully capture an event with all the facets. And I think anybody who's ever been reported on or had an issue that they care about that's been covered by journalists, they want their perspectives to be shared in as much totality as possible. And I think an issue as civil unrest really encapsulates more than, okay, there was economic damage and some people took to the streets. There were longstanding issues that people wanted to bring to the forefront. And I think this statement brings that with more clarity.
Dr. Steve Bien-Aimé is an assistant professor at NKU. Thanks for the time you gave us today.
Thank you.